Now we're holding on page 48 in Psachim, about the middle of narrow lines towards the end of Ois Memches. We learned yesterday that when Rabbi Akiva was in jail, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai came to ask him to teach him Torah, and at first Rabbi Akiva refused, and Rabbi Shimon kind of threatened him and said, I'll tell my father and my Serach HaLamalchus. We discussed yesterday a few possibilities what he meant by that. There was another one, actually, which I saw, that Ben Yehoyada says he means not Malchus as in the Roman government, but Malchus as in Sfiras HaMalchus, from which he explains that Puranus comes from there. So he explains Yehoy was actually a great Talmud Chacham. We find him mentioned in the Zohar sometimes. The Chachamim mentioned over there was Chavireinu, our colleagues. He was evidently an Odom Shal Tzura. So therefore, Rav Shimon is saying that if you don't teach me Torah, then I'm going to tell my father Yechoy, and he's going to call down something milamayla from Sfiras HaMalchus on you. So the reason he refused, we said, is because Rav Akiva didn't want to endanger Rav Shimon. He didn't want to endanger Rav Shimon, but Rav Shimon tells him, to use a metaphor. So Rav Akiva says to him that it's true. Of course, I want to teach you Torah even more than you, the calf, want to nurse. I, the mother, want to be able to give milk, but it's dangerous for you. So Rav Shimon says, fine, but I'm the one in danger. I'm willing to take the risk. So therefore, Rav Akiva relented, and he is going to teach him something. So Omalei, Rav Akiva tells him, first of all, so we said yesterday there were five things. So the five things are as follows. First of all, im bikashta lechonek hitola b'ilan gadol. If you want to be strangled or choked, then hang yourself on a tall tree. Now, what does that mean? So Rashi says you want to say something that other people are going to pay attention to. Then learn by a great Rav, and then say over what you learn in his name. And that way, in other words, you say it on your own, people may not be interested in accepting it. But if you say it in the name of this great Rebbe, then people will pay attention to it. The Rashbam learns a little bit differently. He says that it means that if you have something, you yourself have come up with an idea in Torah, and you want people to accept it, then what you should do is attribute it to a great person, to a great Talmud Chacham, and say it over in his name, and then people will accept it from you. Now, the Magen Avraham brings that, and he says on the face of it, so that would mean, so even if the Rebbe never actually said that, then you could say it over in his name, but he says, on the other hand, there's a different place where the Gemara says that a person should not do that. So he leaves it tzorech iyun. Different Acharonim talk about different possibilities. The one possibility the Machzor Shekel talks about over there, if you're very, very certain, 100% or 1,000% certain that the thing is correct, that's when you can do that. If you think that there's any possible flaw in it, then don't do that. So that would reconcile those two. The Chidah says another possibility that this kind of thing is reserved only for Talmud Chachamim of great caliber, where I guess it fits kind of with what the Machzor Shekel was saying. Such a person will know that what he's saying is ironclad, then therefore he can say it over in the name of somebody greater than him. Okay, so that's the first one. Eyud Yaakov doesn't really like all of these explanations, and he says that these explanations, fine, but how does that fit with the word lechonik, which means to be strangled? So he says what it means is kind of you want to strangle the other guy who's opposing you in this matter of Torah, meaning in other words, you want to get him that you're going to be able to say something and he's not going to be able to refute you. Then he told a bit of an gadol, so you attribute it to a great person, and then he's not going to be able to refute it. He's not going to be able to speak up. So as if like he was strangled, as if like he can't speak up and say anything. The Oruch has a whole different explanation. He says that it means when you have a very serious din to judge in a matter in din in a farshis, then similar to what Rashi says, ask a great chacham, ask a great rav, and decide based on him. So in bikasha lechonik, so to speak, you need to strangle somebody. You think that there's din in a farshis, which might end up where somebody is going to have to be put to death. He told the ilan gadol, don't decide it on your own. Make sure you check with a great rav first and follow his psak. By the time Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon are around, there's no more din in a farshis. There hadn't been din in a farshis by that point for 100 years. So b'pashtus, we mean things that, I think Ben Yehoyada says, we don't mean literally din in a farshis. We mean things that are tantamount to din in a farshis, like things involving serious matters involving gittin v'kiddushin or other things like that. So that was the first thing. Second of all, achshat melamedes bincha Torah, when you're teaching your son Torah, lamdehu b'sefer muga. Teach him from a sefer that is carefully corrected. Keep in mind, in those days, the only sfarim they had written are books of Tanakh, the 24 books of Tanakh. And they were written, of course, without nekudas and Torah. So you have to make sure that it's very accurately proofread, because and then you're going to be teaching him the nekudas and everything, baal peh. Maihi, so what does that mean? Why is that such a serious matter? We're talking about when it's new. Rashi explains when the child is first learning a new topic. Because once a mistake has entered, then it's going to stay that way. In other words, if he first learns something incorrectly, that's going to tend to stay with him. And even later on, you correct it, it may be too late. He's already absorbed the wrong way of learning it. So therefore, it's important to make sure to begin with that the sefer he learns from should be carefully corrected, so there's no mistake in there in the first place. Marsha learns differently, that it means that it means the sefer itself. So you have, when there's a new sefer which has never been checked over, be extra careful about using it to teach your son from, because there's more likely to be mistakes in it, as opposed to, in other words, if it's an old sefer that's been in use for a while, other people have looked it over, and if there were any mistakes, then they're more likely to have been corrected already. Tosfos, by the way, points out that Rava himself, now you have two different girsos over here, where the Rav or Rava, if we have the girsa over here, Rava, then Rava himself, actually in a Gemara in Bava Basra, says no, Shabeshta Memela Nofach, that a child may learn something incorrectly in the first place, but eventually that will go away. Once he's taught it right, then he'll learn the right way after all. So in fact, Tosfos over here says, so in that case, how does that fit? And so Tosfos answers, the difference is here you're talking about where the sefer itself actually has a mistake in it. So what happens, that's going to reinforce much more strongly by the child that this is the correct way to say the word, because this is how I have it right in front of me here, black on white. As opposed to when you're teaching him something baal peh, it's true. Rava is saying over there, if you make a mistake in teaching him, it's not so bad. Eventually it can be undone. You can teach him the right way and he'll stick with it. With that said, in that Gemara in Bava Basra, you have Rav Dimi saying the other way around. He says, like Rava says over here, Shabesh to Kivin to all, once there's a mistake, it tends to persist. And you have the story over there of Yoyov with Edom, and also which bears out that point. So in fact, Yon Yaakov points out that evidently the halacha is like Rav Dimi, that you have to be careful to begin with to make sure that what you're teaching the child is correct. Don't depend on, fine, there's a mistake now, we'll correct it later, because the correction later may not sting. Okay, so anyway, that was the second thing Rabbi Akiva taught Rav Shimon. The third thing is, don't cook in a pot that your fellow Yid cooked in. Maihi, what does that mean? It means don't marry a divorced woman while her ex is still alive. As we learn in a Braisa, that when a divorced man marries a divorced woman, when they have relations, effectively you have four minds in the bed, because each one is thinking about their former spouse. And you're not allowed to do that. So the Gemara mentions in Nedarim that a person is not allowed to, when they're having, whether the man or the woman, whether the husband or the wife, is not allowed to be thinking of anybody else doing tashmish. And like this, they tend to think about their ex. So it's one thing, we're talking about a gorush and a grusha specifically, because since their ex is alive, so therefore they it may still be on their mind. If we're talking about a widow or a widower, that's different. After a while, the Ebishtim makes that people who have passed away are forgotten. So therefore there's less of an issue with it. Well, that's according to the first opinion. In fact, the Rashbam brings from that same Gemara in Nedarim, you have a concept the Gemara mentions over there, Grushas Halev. And so Rashbam relates that to this Gemara over here, that here he's thinking of his first wife. So therefore, if he now when he's having relations with his second wife, then the children might be bnei grushas halev. However, Marsha says no, that's not what it means really. Grushas halev means that he has plans to divorce her and he hasn't told her yet, or he hasn't followed through with it. So that would be that at that point you shouldn't be having relations with her. You have a din where you saw him isha v'daita legarsha, but you also have that you shouldn't marry her with intent to divorce her, but you also have that you shouldn't be having relations with her once he's decided to divorce. So here though we're talking about something else. Here you just have the issue of arba deis b'mitta, that each one is going to be thinking about their ex. Another way you could say is maybe Rabbi Akiva's point to Rabbi Shimon is not only talking about a grusha, but even an almona. Lafisha, it's true, she's not going to have her former husband so much on his mind, please, on her mind, because he's passed away. But nevertheless, Lafisha in Kola, it's boys shovers. Not all the fingers, which is a euphemism, are the same. Meaning, in other words, she may mentally compare him and Tashmish with him, with Tashmish with her former husband, and it may be Rashi and the Rashbam say respectively, Rashi says she may be mezalzel on him, the Rashbam says more strongly she may even dislike him because it's less comfortable, whatever it is. So even an Amona, then, now obviously it's not a hard and fast rule. There are many cases. We have many, many examples of Tanoim and Amaroyim and later Chachamim who married Amonis and Grushis. But nevertheless, Rabbi Akiva is telling Rabbi Shimon, other things being equal, best to avoid it. Next, mitzvah. Then he tells him the fourth thing, mitzvah of guf gadol. How do you accomplish a mitzvah and you also have a big guf of it, that you're going to become rich from it? Oichol peres v'loy schar. By consuming peres and not getting a schar. There's actually two different gerusoys over here. The loy schar with a vav, with an aleph, as we have it in front of us, or the loy schar with a vav, which means, and to him there is schar. So Rashi explains that what we're talking about over here is, now you lend somebody money, you're accomplishing a mitzvah with that. Now, ultimately, you want your loan to be paid back. Usually, of course, you're going to get back exactly what you lent the guy. You can't take ribis. However, there is something the Gemara talks about in Bava Metzia called Mashkanta de Sura, because they used to do it in the city of Sura. The idea is that, let's say, for example, you lent the person $1,000. So he has, let's say, a field. So you say, now what you're doing is we're having a mortgage on this field. For the next 10 years, I will be entitled to take the produce of it and we'll assume that the produce of this field is worth $100 per year. So after 10 years, the loan will be paid off through the produce of this field. Now, in practice, many times, now you're taking a risk, because after all, there may be years when the field doesn't produce or produces very little. But on the other hand, if in normal years, the field may produce a lot more than $100 worth a year. Therefore, it comes out at the end, you're getting a lot more than your original $1,000, but it's not considered ribis. And it's completely mutter in halacha. The Gemara discusses over there in Perek Ezo Neshech and Bava Metzia a number of different kinds of mashkanta, some of which are outright osur, some of which are osur daraisa, some of which are avak ribis, and this mashkanta desura, which is completely mutter. So therefore, so Rabbi Akiva is telling Rabbi Shimon, you have an example over here. You're accomplishing a mitzvah, and you're also getting a big goof out of it. By this oichol peres, because so you're accomplishing a mitzvah. The other guy has ready cash that he can use to start a business or whatever it is. And meanwhile, you're also gaining from it in that you're getting the payrus, and over the years, you're likely to get more than what you gave him in the first place. So that would fit better with the gears of a loy schar, with a vav, meaning that he has a schar. On the other hand, the Marsha talks about over here that you can also understand that according to the gears of a loy schar with an aleph, as we have it in front of us, meaning that the goof of the mitzvah, he has the keren of the mitzvah, lo'olam hazeh. Lo'olam haba, rather. So oichol peres v'loy schar, he doesn't get a schar from it, and he doesn't get a schar beruchnius of it from this world. All of his schar is kept for olam haba. And the last thing, Rabbi Akiva tells Rabbi Shimon, mitzvah beguf tohar, how do you accomplish a mitzvah, and with you also have a pure body, noise isha v'loy bonim, when you marry a woman and you have children. So first of all, it means, in other words, the actual mitzvah itself is being accomplished b'tahara, because a man gets married and then has children, then that way he's not troubled by hirhurim when he's learning Torah. And he has children, so it can mean he has children from her parshat and he's mekayim the mitzvah of puruvu. It can also mean that even if he has children already, he still should remarry, as the Gemara tells us in Yevamos, based on a pasuk in Tehillos, Baburka Zras Zarech V'La'erev Al Tanach Yadecha. Even if a man has had children when he's younger, he should still make an effort, and Talmidim also, he should still make an effort to do more of that when he gets older. As the Gemara mentions over there in Yevamos, with Rabbi Akiva himself, with his 24,000 Talmidim who passed away, and then his other 5 Talmidim, including Rabbi Shimon, who rebuilt Torah in the world. So that would also be included in this Noisei Ishav Aloi Bonim. He already has children. He was married early Matayim, Puruvu, but he still marries again. And whether it ends up that he has more children or not, but at least he's keeping himself from hirhurim and keeping himself in a state of Tahara. So that's mitzvah of a guf Torah. That way he's accomplishing a mitzvah and he keeps his body Torah. Then Yod also talks about an inyan in it. We know Ishmazu Yetchili Yeledes Nekeva, Ishmazu Ras Tchili Yeledes Zohar. So therefore, there's also the idea that if he keeps himself Tohar, Vashas Kashmesh, he's more likely to have sons. And that's also included in this Noisa Isha, Mitzvah Guf Tohar, Noisa Isha Veloibonim, that if he acts in a Tohar-dik way, he'll be more likely to be Zohar to sons rather than daughters. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Shlosha Dvarim Tzivir Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi Es Revi. There are three things that Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi gave instructions to Rebbe. A different girsa over here is Rav, and that girsa seems to fit better because Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is a chaver of Rebbe. He's not really going to be giving him instructions, but even he was a Talmud of his, but if it's to Rav, then it makes more sense. Anyway, Al tas mum ba'atzmacha. Don't make a mum in yourself. Now, on the face of it, it means don't injure yourself, but he doesn't need to tell him that. So Mayhi, what does Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi mean by that? Don't get involved in a din Torah against three people. Because they might play a trick on you. Now, they're not allowed to do this, but one of them may pose as the Baal Din, and the other two pose as the Edim, and then you really haven't got any recourse against them. Therefore, to get involved against them in the first place is almost like making a mum in yourself, that you've gotten yourself in a situation that's going to be very hard to extract yourself from. In fact, Ben Yehoyada said maybe the word mum over here, maybe even Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi told Rebbe, he didn't even say the word mum, maybe mem vav mem is Rosh HaTevis for maso matan or mekach or memka. So doing business, buying and selling, don't do that in this way. The second thing he tells him, Val Tamad al Mekach Bashasha in Lochadomin. Don't go and start asking the merchant for the price and then the details of things when you don't have the money for it, because now you're making him lose out. So the people see that you're involved, that you're interested in buying this thing. So other people are gonna hold back. It was just actually today in Dafayomi where the Gemara mentions this point that where only amahapach b'charora, when you have one person involved in trying to buy or in trying to buy something or get a job or whatever, another person should not interfere and try to get it for himself. So like this, you're asking the storekeeper and you obviously are showing interest in it. That itself is going to make people stay away, and then it causes, in the end, you don't buy because you don't have the money, and then it turns out the storekeeper is suffering a loss. Different Mephoshim point out different other points in it as well, among other things that... It also, on the other hand, it can scare off potential customers for a different reason. They see you were trying to buy it, and then they see you didn't bother. After all, they're going to think it must be inferior merchandise or something. Different considerations like that. Marsha points out, in fact, you also have a din in that point. It is also a matter of a noas dvarim involved. It's not just a midas chasidus. There's actually a noas dvarim involved in that. The guy's expecting he's going to make a sale, and then meanwhile you've wasted his time, and he gets disappointed. So Marsha says v'yesh l'chalik. You could draw a distinction between here and there. Maybe one difference is here. It may even be it's clear to the guy that you have no intention of buying, but nevertheless, it's still other people may not realize that. And like Rashi says, they're going to stay away and so forth. Anyway, the third thing he tells him, when your wife is tovled, don't have relations with her the first night after she tovled. Now, why not? Specifically, we're talking about when she's keeping the dinim of nida as they originally were daraisa, which we don't do anymore. We always consider when a woman has a flow, we always treat her basically like a zav. With the exception that a zava can tovel by day and a nidas tovel by night. So we kind of do a blend of the dinim of nida and zava, but she always keeps shiva nakiyim as though she was a zava and a zava gdola at that. But midaraisa, when a woman is a nida, she only needs to wait until the end of the 7 days, and then 7 days from when the bleeding started. And then as long as it stopped, even if shortly before shkia on the seventh day, then she can tovel that night, and that's it, the mutter. So now Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is telling Rebbe or Rav, don't have relations with her the first night when the case is when she was a nida daraisa, because there was a chazaka until now that the spring is open, she's been bleeding, duma mosh chaziva, it might happen that she ends up, it might happen that she ends up bleeding more. So she might, and then she's going to end up becoming a Zava. So therefore, to be on the safe side, wait until that first night has passed. And if you see the next day is also all clean, then you know there's less of a likelihood anything's going to happen, and you have no problem with that. Nowadays, that we have anyway, you sit Shiva Nakiyim, then there's really no issue with that, because anyway, by the time she toils, the Mayan has long since closed. Next, Shloisha Dvarim Tzivir Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, as Rebbe. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda gave three instructions to Rebbe. And again, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda is a chaver of Rebbe, so maybe here also the Girsa should be Rab. Anyway, Al Tetzi Yechidi Balayla. First of all, don't go out alone at night. Now, there are various places where the Gemara talks about the danger of going out at night. Here, the Gemara is going to talk about it's a matter of shadim. In different other places, the Gemara mentions other points about it as well, particularly a Talmid Chacham shouldn't go out at night alone for a number of reasons. Nechashad, people are going to suspect that he's going out for something illicit, and because of mazikin, and because of other reasons. So even when one or another doesn't apply, and for example, when we talk about mazikin, the Gemara mentions soon, it applies maybe only on certain days of the week, but nevertheless, there are the other considerations as well. Anyway, the second thing he tells him about Tamad Lifnei Aner Orum, don't stand undressed in front of a candle, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute, that it can have a bad effect on a person's health. And the third thing about Tamad, Valtikonis Lamerchatz Chadosha, don't go into a new bathhouse, Shemati Poches, because the floor may fall through. Bathhouses in those days were built, and you can find the various places you go now to Israel nowadays, you can find remains of them. There was an underfloor, then there would be columns supporting a second level floor. The space in between them, they would fill up with hot coals, and then above it, they'd have the water, and the water would get heated up that way. So if the floor falls in, you find yourself among the hot coals, a person could be in a lot of danger. Ad kedekach, in fact, we learned in brachas, the Gemara mentions over there special brachas and tefillas that a person should say before and after going into the bathhouse. Before he goes in, he should daven to Hashem to save him from the fire and from the water. And after he goes out, he should thank Hashem that he saved him from that. So in a new bathhouse, it hasn't been tested. The floor hasn't really been tested yet. So it's more likely it might not have been built properly and it might cave in. So v'ad kama. So how long does he have to? How long does he have to avoid it? Until 12 months. Once the bathhouse has been in use for 12 months, then if it was going to cave in, it would have already happened, and therefore you can assume the floor is sturdy at that point. When we said Val Tamid Rifnei Ner Orum, don't stand undressed in front of a candle. Kedetanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Ha'im Rifnei Ner Orum, if a person stands undressed in front of a candle, have a nichbe, then he's going to become epileptic. He's going to suffer seizures. What the mechanism of it is, the Gemara doesn't say. It could be something involving Shadim, could be something else. Also, the Braisa continues, I'm a shamash mitosil or aner, if a couple has relations by the light of a candle, having like bonim nichbim, then they're going to have children who are epileptics. Now, elsewhere, the Gemara mentions b'chlal, that a couple is b'chlal not even allowed, the halacha, we had it actually earlier in the Masechta, we had a brief thing about it, that a couple is not allowed to have relations by candlelight, and the Gemara mentions elsewhere, it's a matter of avas yisrael, shema yirah b'dvar erev, tisgana olav, he may see something unattractive on her, and then she'll be less, and then he won't like her, or she'll be less attractive in his eyes. So there's that consideration, but even aside from that, we're saying in addition, it can have a bad effect on the health of the children. So the Gemara says, Tanan Abanan, we learn in another Braisa. Hamishamish mitosa alamita shatinik yoshan alea. If they have relations on a bed where a baby is sleeping, oisatinik nichba, that baby is going to become epileptic. Veloyamoran elodloy have a barshata. Now that only applies when the baby is under a year old. I will have a barshata, less than ba. If the baby is a year old, then there's no problem with it. Furthermore, this about the baby, if the baby is under a year old, is only when the baby is asleep. I will tear less than ba. If the baby is awake, then there's no problem with it. So in short, the problem is only when there's a baby under a year old asleep in the same bed. If the baby is awake or if he's over a year old, then there's no problem. Furthermore, this only applies that there can be a bad effect on the children, on the child, only if the baby is sleeping at the foot end of the bed. But if the baby is near the parents' heads, then there's no problem. And finally, it applies only when he's not putting his hand on the baby while they're having relations. But if he puts his hand on the baby, then there's no problem. So there's only a certain limited number of circumstances in which it can be a problem. Bechlal, though, you do have a different thing. The Gemara mentions in Nida that your couple is not allowed to have relations in the presence of anybody. And in fact, the Gemara mentions over there Midas Chasidus of a couple of Amidoyim where they would even get all the flies and other creatures like that, whatever out of their bedroom before they'd have relations. So based on all that, maybe even though the Gemara is saying over here, maybe it won't cause the baby to be nichbeh if you have one of these things, if the baby's over a year old or awake or you have a hand on him, etc. But maybe it's still not such a great idea. Okay. When he said, when Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda says to Rabbi, "I'll take you yichidi b'layla," he tells him, "Don't go out alone at night." So why not? Tanya, lo yetsa adam yichidi b'layla, lo b'layla reviyas, v'lo b'layla shabbosis. A person shouldn't go out alone on Tuesday nights and on Friday nights. Now again, we learn elsewhere in the Gemara that a Talmud Chacham shouldn't go out alone at night on any night. So that was what Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda was telling Rebbe, but he's saying even if none of the considerations mentioned in those other places apply, there's no problem of chashad or anything like else, but there's still the problem of mazikin, particularly on these nights. Mipneshi igras bas machlos yotzis, because igras bas machlos, which is like the queen of the shadim, goes out. He or shmona also riba malach chabala, she together with 180,000 malachim of destruction. And every one of those 180,000 has independent permission to harm. So it's not even like they need to check with Igras first whether they should. They have the power to act independently. So therefore, there's great danger on those nights more than any other night. Why are we calling her Igras Bas Machlas? Marsha points out, you have Machlas Bas Yishmael, the daughter of Yishmael, who married Esav. So maybe the idea is that this queen of the Shadim comes from her. So then therefore she's associated with Igras Bas Machlas. Ben Yehoyada expands on that a bit, and he brings a medrash about how Yishmael had a first wife who he ended up divorcing, and then he had a second wife, and this Machlas comes from his first wife who was a no-good Nick, and therefore all of this Koichas HaTroma come from that. So the Gemara continues, Me'ikra have a shchicha kol yom. Originally, this Igras Bas Machlas and her retinue of Malachi Chabala would be around every day. Zimna chod a pogabar of Chanina ben Dosa. Until one time Rav Chanina ben Dosa met up with her, Omrele, she says to him, Ilav de machrizi aloch berakia, he's zorim Chanina bni v'terose. If it weren't for the fact that they announced in Shemayim, and she being a shed after all is half malach, so she knows what's going on in Shemayim, so they announce, he's zorim Chanina bni v'terose, be careful around Chanina, my son, and his Torah. In other words, Marsha says two things. He's Chanina, just that alone. He's a Baal Maisim. You have many stories in the Gemara about his Tzidkos and the Nisim that happened with him. And number two, also he was, and also the Torah that he learned and taught. So if not for that, she says to him, Mashvina l'damach tauti pshiti, I would make your blood worth no more than two pshiti, which is two small coins, or the other gives a sakantich, I would have endangered you. So in other words, in effect, she's telling him, you know, I'm roaming around. What are you doing around in my territory? Omala, so Rav Chanina ben Dosa grabs the opportunity. He says, if I'm so important in Shemayim that they make such an announcement about me, then I am making a gzera on you that you should never come through settled areas. You can stay in the forests and the deserts and the places like that. Don't be in cities and places where people live. But she says to him, I beg of you, leave me at least a little room. Give me some time when I'm allowed to be in the cities. So he left her Friday nights and Tuesday nights because fewer people are around and about then anyway. That's why you have, for example, in Parshas B'chukosai, B'nasati, Gishmecha B'itam, and Rashi mentions over there, B'itam is Tuesday nights and Friday nights. The Gemara and Tainus mentions that Taka, you have an example from the times when they were, from the times of Shloimsi and Hamalka, when in fact the Taka rained only on those nights because they were Osin Ritzon and Shalmokim. So therefore, he left her anyway, fewer people are around those times. So fine, you want to roam around with your Malachi Chabala then fine, we can live with that. Yeah, well, next, the two, Yoimachad Pogabe Ba'abaya. Generations later, the same Igras Bas Machlas meets up with Abaya. Omer Alei, she says to him the same thing. If not for the fact that they announce about you and Shemayim, be careful with Nachmeni and his Torah. Nachmeni is a name for Abaya, and there's different opinions. Is it that Nachmeni is his real name, and Abaya is a nickname for him because of his Yosim, Abaya being Rosh HaTevis, Asher B'chol Yerucham Yosim, or the other way around, that his real name was Abaya, and he was nicknamed Nachmeni after his grandfather, the father of Rabbah Bar Nachmeni, because Rabbah raised him. One of the Goyim, I think Rabbi Hai Goyim, has a variation on the one about Abaya being because he's a Yosim. He says what it was is, so since Abaya raised him and he learns that Abaya's real name was Nachmeni. Rabbi didn't want to call him Nachmeni because that would be calling him by his father's name, and he didn't want to do that. So instead, he called him Abaya, like we would say Abala, a Tatala, and therefore eventually that became the name Abaya. There's the later explanation, a more famous one, that Abaya stands for Asher B'chol Yerucham Yosim. Anyway, so if it weren't for that, she says, Mashvin alach l'domach tauti tre moi, I would make your blood worth no more than 2 mois, or have a second tich, or I would have endangered you. By Rav Chanina ben Dosa, it was too pshiti. Here she's saying 2 mois, and maybe there had been inflation in between. Maybe. Anyway. So he tells her the same thing as Rav Chanina ben Dosa. If I'm so important in Shemayim, then I'm going to be gozer on you that you're never allowed to go through the settled areas. I'm not going to give you any breaks that are like Rav Chanina ben Mendoza. You're never allowed to come into these areas ever again. But the Gemara asks, the fact is, we do sometimes see her retinue of Shadim in settled areas. And the answer is, Ahu gaz yosim. The answer is, that is, they're going on the bypaths. What happens is their horses get away from them, and the Shadim come to grab their horses back. In other words, Rashi explains, they're going like, it's true, they're not going in settled areas, they're going like on these paths through the vineyards and whatever. Meanwhile, sometimes their horses start bolting and they have to run after them to catch them, and then they wind up in settled areas. But not that they normally traverse through there, because Abaya told them they're not allowed to. Ben Yoyadi explains a little differently. He says gazyosa means like stragglers. Like sometimes you have the ones who get a little lost on the way or whatever, and they wind up blundering into the settled areas, but basically not. More advice from Chachamim. Omale Rav l'Rav Asi, al todur be'ir d'reshe Asya. Don't live in a city where the mayor of the city is an Asya. Now, an Asya means a doctor. Rashi gives two explanations. One is it means a doctor. The other is it means a Talmud Chacham. So Rashi explains, either way, the point is that they're too busy with their own affairs. They're not going to pay attention to what's needed for the city. Now, there are other explanations as well. This Gemara is also in Bava Basra, and there's a girsa that Tosfos brings over there that he tells him, don't live in a city, Dereish Mosi Asi, not Asyo, with an aleph at the end, but Asi. In which case, that would mean don't live in a city. It could mean don't live in a city where the mayor is a Talmud Chacham like you, Rav Asi, because again, he's going to be busy with his learning and not pay attention to the affairs of the city. Or actually, another possibility is it means don't live in a city where you yourself are the mayor. In other words, don't accept the job if they offer it to you. Following the girsa that we have over here, Asya, that it means a doctor, Ben Yehoyada makes another point on it as well. He says a lot of times you have doctors are overcautious when it comes to health matters. He's going to say, for example, I can't stay out late to work on things. I need to get a good night's sleep. I need to stay away from this area because it's not so healthy, etc. And therefore, he's not available at all times and in all places where he needs to be to look after matters of the city because he's over concerned about his health. Then Rav continues, don't live in a city where there's no horses neighing or dogs barking. The point is, the horses and the dogs help protect against infiltrators, against enemies and ganovim and so forth. Ben Yoyada points out, in particular, why we mentioned the neighing of the horses, that alone may frighten off would-be robbers and infiltrators or whatever. They hear the neighing of the horses, they realize, oh, so the city patrols are not just on foot, they've got horses, so then we better not try over there because they're going to be able to chase after us very easily. They could have used that, it's true, yeah. Yeah, very much so. And then the third thing, Rav tells Rav Asi, V'loy tinsev tauti, don't marry two wives, because the two of them may plot together against you. The inasvas tauti, if you do marry two wives, nosiv tlas, then marry a third one, because that way three of them are not going to be talking so closely together. It's hard to have such a close relationship among three people, and therefore if two of them start plotting against you, the third one will blab and then will end up telling you. Similarly, Omale Rav le Rav Kahana, Rav gives Rav Kahana some advice. He says, "Apoich ben velta v'leis tapich b'mili." Turn over a carcass, in other words, even do work with turning over carcasses for a living, for example, rather than turning over words. So in other words, don't be too much involved in talking. Marshall explains that it means, in other words, like this, you're going to be involved with handling Nevelis, but it's a pretty degrading thing to do, and it makes a person tame. On the other hand, talking too much can lead to nivol peh. So loshen neufel al loshen, like you have a similar word, nevela and nivel, which is worse. So therefore, better that you should be dealing as much as possible with nevelas rather than with words, which can lead to more serious things. And similarly, pshoit nevel to b'shuka, even strip off the skin off a carcass of an animal in the marketplace, v'toil agra, and you'll get paid for it. V'loy tema kahana rabban or gavra rabban, don't say I'm a great koyen, I'm a great person, the zila b'milsan, it's beneath my dignity to do such work. No. A person should be willing to do whatever kind of work it takes to earn parnosa, rather than take money for learning Torah. The Rambam, in fact, in Pirkei Avos, criticizes very harshly people who take money for learning Torah. Different other Rishonim and Achronim after him find ways to justify it. And one thing they say is if you were to do that way, if everybody has to support themselves, and that then that's the only way they can learn Torah, you would have very few or no Talmud Chachamim. And then it's based on that the Olam fears like that, which is why we have things like Kollelim and whatever. But still, Rav is telling Rav Kahana, rather than standing on your dignity, better do even the most menial work. What? If you can polish diamonds, then don't be baking bread. It's true. But if the only work you can find to get employment is to strip a carcass in the marketplace, then better to do that. By the way, when it says Kahana Ano, it doesn't necessarily mean I'm a Kohen. In fact, the Rav Kahana that Rav is talking to, his Talmud, was not a Kohen. You find earlier in the Masechta, he married a Bas Kohen. He says on himself, if I hadn't married a Bas Kohen, I wouldn't have ended up going into Golos. So Kahana Ano doesn't mean I'm a Kohen. It means I'm Kahana, as in the great Talmud Chacham. Okay, we'll continue with this tomorrow. That's a shame. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ola, Chaf Vav Tishrei. Now let's get back on track with the right date, since I did it wrong the last couple of days. When Chazal described Yemos Mashiach, so they talk about all the tremendous gashmiistic good that we're going to have, La'asid Lavoi, that you plant a tree and that same day it'll produce fruit, and the earth will produce gulskois of plain melas, ready to eat bread and clothing. Now, what does it mean? The deeper meaning is that in Yemos Mashiach, the avoda is going to be like chakika me'eva al eva. It'll be carved like something carved all the way through, not just written like ink on paper where it can be erased, but carved where the letters are part of the metzius of the stone itself. So therefore, avodas Hashem will penetrate and be poil on all koichas and everything of a person and be poil and on all the metzius in the world. Therefore, there won't be any break between. There won't be any separation. A person does a pola and right away it'll grow. The shefa eliki will come right away. That's why a person plants and right away fruit will be produced. Because now the avoda and the elikus will be penetrating everything. The gashmias itself will be completely connected with its shurdish in Dvar Avay. Continuing on halachas of before Shabbos. Before Shabbos, every Erev Shabbos, a person should think over what he did and arouse himself to tshuva and fix up everything he did during Sheshes Yemei Ma'aseh, because Erev Shabbos includes all the day of the week, all the days of the week, in the same vein as Erev Rosh Chodesh includes all the days of the month. So the idea is, in other words, the same way as you have Yom Kippur Katan on Erev Rosh Chodesh, in a similar way you have Shavua Katan on Erev Shabbos.